Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Learn how to structure your small firm to be a profitable small firm. How much should we charge? How much should we pay our employees? How can we plan for profit? Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects. We'll teach you everything you need to know. It's at entrearchitect.com/free course. You are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 208. Welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, or you may be in the process right now of launching a startup, is that you? Or you may be like me, an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference every day. This podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. The future of architecture for small firms, and I would say to an extent, all architecture firms, is the remote team. Using technology and online tools to acquire new clients, manage projects, and work with a team of top professionals distributed throughout the world, the virtual studio with a remote team will allow you the flexibility, the freedom, the prosperity, and the success that many of us are seeking as small firm architects. In this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, how to build a million-dollar small firm using a remote team with Wynn Whitman of selfbuiltarchitect.com. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Core by BQE Software. And I'm going to share a little bit more about these great companies later in the show. But as we get started here, take a quick note to schedule some time this week to go visit each one of them. RCAT, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Core by BQE. And let them know that you appreciate them for supporting us, because when they support us, they're supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Wynn Whitman, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hello, Mark. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Wynn Whitman is a contemporary residential architect based in Austin, Texas. His work's been featured in numerous publications, including Architectural Record, Architectural Digest, The Robb Report, Green Building and Design, Hinge, the Discovery Network, HGTV. So he's been all over. He has a BA from Tufts and a Master's of Architecture at the University of Texas in Austin. He's received plenty of awards from the AIA, World Architecture News, the best green innovation from green building and design for his Whitman panel designs. We'll have to talk about that someday too. I'd love to hear about that. Wynn is also the founder of Self-Built Architect. So you may have heard about him from there, because I know there's a lot of buzz in the Entree Architect community about this guy. And so I wanted to invite him here, let him tell his story about what he's doing and talk about this program that he has. So Self-Built Architect, for anybody who doesn't know, is an online community and an educational program where Wynn shares his knowledge about leveraging technology and using online tools to create personal freedom, prosperity, professional excellence. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to learn how to build a $1 million business by using a remote team. And that's what I want to. I want to learn the tips and techniques, what you're doing over at Self-Built Architect, Wynn. But before we get into that, I want to know about you. I want you to sort of share your origin story, go back as far as you want to go. Where did you discover architecture? What inspired you to become an architect? And then give us that story from that point forward to where you find yourself today.
Thank you, Mark. My love for architecture started in my mother's basement woodworking as a kid. And I spent my entire adolescence down in that basement trying not to chop off my fingers.
It sounds like my son, Henry, he's had the same problem and actually has 3 stitches in his pinky right now from sharpening an axe. So,
yeah, I had several trips to the emergency room. And from that came a love of art and architecture. I majored in art history at Tufts, and I didn't discover that. I was a liberal arts major, and I bounced around everything from English literature to human factors and engineering before I discovered art history. And I fell in love with architecture. And one of my professors, Margaret Henderson Floyd, suggested that I go down to Austin. She said, "Wynn, Boston is way too parochial for you. You need to go to Austin, Texas." So even then I was a bit of a rebel, and I made it down to Austin, and I had my first margarita, and I saw all the pretty girls walking down 6th Street, and I decided this was the place for me. So
your teacher knew you well.
She did. Fast forward a few years later, I have my master's, and there's a recession going on, and none of the firms are hiring young architects. So I begin buying and fixing up homes and selling them. And then I discovered an unfinished office building, and the developer had gone bankrupt. The building was sitting, it was basically just a steel frame with glass on it. And I put in an offer of $105,700. And then over the next year and a half, a ragtag team and myself, with no building permits, it was just outside the city limits, we were running our own wires, we were using heavy equipment. It was a great learning experience. And I finished the building, and just as I was finishing it, I received a call from a company called Reese Design. They design aircraft interiors for luxury jets. Their clients include the Sultan of Brunei and Adnan Khashoggi. They loved the building, and they bought it from me, and I made my first $1 million at age 27.
Not bad.
So
it's a good way to get started. Pull yourself out of a recession.
It was a good way to get started. I flew up to Chicago and did what every 27-year-old does who gets $1 million. I bought a red Ferrari and I drove home. I like to say that I invested 90% of the money in women and cars, and I wasted the other 10%.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I got back to Austin, the idea of going to work for a firm was suddenly less attractive to me. And I began developing and building very unusual homes, homes that realtors would tell me I had no chance of selling, and lo and behold, I would always find a buyer.
And so, these houses that the realtors that's sort of something that triggers with me, because are those houses are you designing contemporary houses that you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, and so the realtors are looking at them and saying there's no market for that. The market's too small.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And of course now everybody's doing contemporary. And I guess I was a little bit ahead of my time, but I managed to make it work. And I sold my last spec for a record price of $3.7 million in that area in 2007. By that time, I was already practicing architecture as well.
And that's in Texas?
You're still in Texas? That was
there.
In Texas.
Yeah.
Then the recession of 2008 hit. And at that time, I had a fairly traditional office setup. I was renting office space in a cool old brick building, and I felt really important, and I had my own plotters and employees and workstations, but I noticed that I wasn't making any money at the end of the day. I had my expenses were eating up all of my profits. Then the recession of 2008 hit. By 2010, all of my work had dried up. I had to let my employees go. I had to get rid of my office, and I realized that I had to do things in a different way. And it's about that time that I began to realize all the tools that had recently become available to allow people to work essentially from anywhere with an internet connection. And I read books like The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and slowly but surely, I cobbed together a virtual firm.
That's 2010. You realize that you closed the office, and do you right away start building that new firm, the new idea?
I would say yes. I mean, basically, my office became virtual
by
default.
Yeah, okay.
And I had to figure out a way to, I at that point, I still had a bit of a reputation for high-end contemporary residential work, and I needed to maintain the same high-touch approach to architecture and to dealing with my clients. I couldn't suddenly go from meeting in a nice brick historic building to meeting at Starbucks. So I began with the premise that I did not want the client experience to suffer at all as a result of my remote working. And we'll get into some of the ways that I do that in a minute. But fast forward, in the last 10 years, I've been able to build up a remote firm with independent contractors that I believe to be the largest cloud-based firm in the world. We typically have, right now, we have 14 million plus projects going, and we have more homes going than the largest brick and mortar residential architecture firm here in Austin. So a lot of times people say, well, do you have a small firm? And small is one of those pejorative terms. It's almost assumed that you have to have a big firm, but my goal was never to be big. My goal was to have the kind of lifestyle that I wanted, to have the freedom and mobility and resources to live my life as I wish while practicing amazing architecture. So that's what I set out to do, and things are still evolving, and I'm having a great time at it, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, this is a subject that I get a lot of feedback on. Many, many architects in the Entree Architect community are, some of them by default are working remotely, some of them are choosing to work remotely. Your story and my story are similar, except for the 27-year-old millionaire. I went through the same recessions you did. I suffered trying to get a job when I first came out of architecture school, 2010. The only difference between you and me in 2010 is that I started using my credit card to keep the firm open and fell into a lot of debt. Something that I've talked about on other episodes. I've since then cleaned that all up, but that was a big mistake that I made. Rather than just closing the office like you did, I
was fortunate in that I lost all my credit cards because my credit was so terrible.
Well, we have very good credit, always had good credit, and but just had a lot of debt, just a lot of debt. And got out of that debt. But then when the economy came back, that's when, so you sort of discovered this remote team, this virtual office or whatever you want to call it, right around 2010. I went through the recession with the brick and mortar office. Things came back. My firm had shrunk, and my lease had come up. And I'm like, I'm looking around at the same tools you are and saying, why am I going to renew that lease? Why am I going to start growing that big firm again and spending all that money on expenses and overhead when I could go home? I could send my staff home. I could build my own office at home and do everything remotely. And so I did the same thing. And so we do get a lot of feedback on that. So I want to talk about sort of how you did that. Maybe back in 2010, what did you do? And then what's changed since 2010?
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect. We could not do this without them, so please support them. RCAT, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Core by BQE Software. The time has come for your firm to begin gathering product and material information for its next project. You've been there, I've been there, we've all been there. Let's say that you're tasked with finding the top gas fireplace manufacturers, and you need CAD, BIM, and specifications. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a search engine that showed you who has the data you need, so you don't have to go all through Google and find a piece here and a piece there and spend the entire day finding this? Wouldn't it be nice if there was a search engine, one search engine, that did all of that? There is. It's called RCAT.com. Search for a product or even a CSI section and get a list of North American manufacturers and the data they offer. And even better, you can download all that technical data for free. You don't even have to register to use RCAT. You don't even have to give them your email address. It's free. Save your time, your money, and your frustration and just go to RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. Payroll and benefits. You love them? No, they're hard, especially when you're a small business. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations, right? We're all in that mode right now with taxes and regulations. The old school payroll providers that some of us are using, they're not built for the way that we work today. Gusto, our friends at Gusto, they're making payroll and benefits and human resources easy for us small businesses. Modern technologies, they do all the heavy lifting, so it's easy for us to get it right. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners here at Entree Architect Podcast exclusive limited time deal, right? Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free. 3 months. That's long enough to figure this thing out, right? 3 months free once you run just one payroll. Just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto, G-U-S-T-O, and claim your free 3 months of payroll processing right now. entrearchitect.com/gusto. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. They do everything. My favorite feature in FreshBooks is the automated invoice reminders. I love this. I think that sending invoices and getting paid is one of the biggest barriers to our success as an entrepreneur architect. If we're not sending invoices, we're not getting paid. FreshBooks makes it easy to send out invoices and get paid online
with the click of a button. And when your client doesn't pay you on time, FreshBooks will send them a friendly email reminder through a simple system that you have full control of. I love this. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get paid faster. Get the simplest way to be more productive, to get organized, and most importantly, like I said, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free for 30 days, and be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. One of the most often requested resources here at the Entree Architect community is project management software. The whole, how do we manage our projects? How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? Today's podcast is sponsored by BQE Software, the makers of the award-winning BQE Core. It's their new product. Core puts project management, business intelligence, billing, time and expense tracking, and accounting together in one intuitive, powerful platform. It's a beautiful system. I've seen it work. There's a demonstration on our website. You should go check it out. With its cloud platform and their mobile app, Core lets you manage people, projects, and profits from anywhere in the world. Get your fully functional 15-day trial of Core by going to entrearchitect.com/BQE. That's entrearchitect.com/BQE. Go check it out right now. Arcat, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Core by BQE Software. Go visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Talk about how you started it first.
So I started it by figuring out that I needed a conference room to meet clients in. A luxury conference room with video conferencing capabilities. And I accomplished this by renting an apartment in a luxury high-rise that had a communal conference room that one could reserve online. And I still maintain a place in that building. I also sought out other alternative conference rooms that I could use in a pinch. One of those is a home automation company, and they've created this beautiful conference room where they can show off all of their TV and audio products, and they would love nothing more than an architect to bring in a client who's building a $4 million home to make that subtle introduction.
Right.
So if one thinks creatively about it, there's really any number of places that you can meet that are suitable. And now there are plenty of places that actually have conference rooms for rent, such as WeWork and similar outlets. But I started with a lot of the same tools that I had used in my brick and mortar, but I began to think, well, okay, if I don't have the plotter anymore, then I need to find a reprographic company. And as I did that, I realized, man, this is so much easier than loading the paper and servicing the plotter. And so every aspect of my firm that I had been doing, whether it was delivering things, you know, suddenly I had a courier service, and the internet and the program GoToMeeting was really the tipping point, I think, in being able to work remotely both with team members and clients. So once I was able to do that, then suddenly I became a laptop architect. Now, certainly I still had to meet with my clients periodically, but when I wasn't meeting with my clients, I could work remotely. And in 2016, I spent a month in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, 2 weeks in Colorado, 2 weeks in Jerusalem, a couple trips to New York, Jackson Hole, Pebble Beach. And some of my clients knew that I was traveling, some didn't. I try to prepare my clients for the fact that I have a busy schedule, that I work not only remotely, but I also work in other states. We have a project right now in Louisiana. We have offices, virtual office in Austin and Dallas, where a builder lets me use their office. So with today's technology, it's entirely possible to not have a brick and mortar office and still have a robust practice with a high degree of client service.
Have you ever experienced any pushback from clients?
The only time I've experienced pushback from clients is when I haven't properly prepared them. Or, for example, there was one client that transitioned from when my firm was going through a transition, overlapped that transition, and there was some resistance in that case.
Yeah, they were expecting one thing and got something else. So it comes down to managing expectations, that right from the beginning, they need to know the way you work and the structure, how the structure works, and how it actually benefits them more than takes away from the process. It's actually a good thing.
Right. And a lot of these people are very busy. One of my current clients is the CEO of one of the largest tech companies here in Austin, has 14,000 employees, and he's always traveling. And he loves the fact that we can knock out a design session, and he's an engineer, so he's very, very much into the details and the specifics. And the fact that we can do a design session, and sometimes it's not even remote, sometimes it's at his house. So that's another example of not being tied down to an office, but freeing up your calendar. You're not managing people, you're not managing offices. As I'll get into later, I'm not keeping track of time or hours. It's all very cut and dried. And so that frees up my day to the point where I'm only working an hour or two a day, typically on design, maybe less. And the rest of the time can be rainmaking activities, networking activities, and client meetings at their place.
You and I both went into this remote team structure having already had a reputation, already having a brick and mortar office. And so when we went to a remote structure, we already had that reputation. So people already knew who we were. They knew the brand. Do you think this is a model that architects coming out of school or somebody starting their first firm, do you think it's still a model that they can use? Or do you think there are challenges with that structure when there's no reputation yet? Is there an expectation that an architect has an office?
No, if anything, I think there's less of an expectation that an architect has an office when there's no reputation. And I'm currently mentoring several young architects, and I coach architects in setting up or transitioning to this type of office. So I think it's entirely possible. It's probably preferable. Young architects, millennials, are much more receptive to this type of working method, and their clients in the future, if they're still buying houses, which is a whole nother topic that we can talk about sometime, are also more receptive to the idea of using technology. There's a video that I saw on YouTube last week, and it's an older man interviewing a young woman who's coming in for a possible job, and saying things like, well, do you know Excel and PowerPoint? And she says, no, but I know Instagram and Snapchat. And he says, are you willing to get here at 8 a.m.? And she said, no, I have to take my dog out and have my latte and this and that. And they were making fun of this young woman, but I thought the real fool was the old guy.
Yeah.
Snapchat and Facebook and Instagram are a hell of a lot more important to know in today's economy than Excel and PowerPoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah. And I think the millennials actually have their priorities right versus our generation, in that they realize that life is more important than work.
Yeah. Yeah. And the digital tools, the technology, we have evolved to that technology. They've grown up with that technology. It's not, it's just a part of life to them. They're not necessarily tools, to them. It's just part of the process of living, is that you have the internet and you have technology and you have these different software, and it's just the way we all work now.
Yeah.
So from a, I want to sort of break this up into two pieces. One, I want to look at the remote firm from the client's perspective, and how do you keep that high touch impression going, and then look at the actual team itself and how that team works. So walk me through a process when you have a potentially new client. How do they first interact with you, and then what's the process to onboard them into this new structure?
Great question. So the first thing they do is they don't get a voicemail. They get a live human being answering the phone. It sounds exactly like calling Gensler or SOM. And I'll get into how I do that in a minute. But then I immediately call them back. The service that I use texts me or can forward the call to me directly. I can usually, if it's a prospective client, I will take the call regardless of where I am. And then I will set up an appointment. And one thing my business coach taught me years ago, and coaching has been incredibly valuable to me, is that until you sign up a client, the purpose of every meeting is to have another meeting. So immediately, there is a very high touch. I never send out a proposal. Never have sent out a proposal. Someone wants me to send a proposal, I know that they're not the person for me. I know that they're just kicking tires. I never charge for an initial visit. And the reason, I won't say I never do. I only do in two situations. If I'm not sure that they're serious, or if I'm not sure that I'm interested.
Right, so you can kind of weed them out by using the fee.
Otherwise, I go meet with them either on their property or in a conference room. The initial meeting is always about gathering information. At that point, I set up a second appointment because studies show the more you meet with somebody, the more you look into their eyes and talk to them, the more, the safer, the more trusting they're going to be. And it's vice versa as well. You can size them up.
Yeah.
So in-person meeting followed up by what I call my roadmap. My roadmap is a presentation for everything that we're going to do, everything that they're going to get. It's not a bunch of legalese. It's not a bunch of numbers. It's about what their dream is and how I'm going to fulfill their dream. And once we establish that I can do that, then we'll talk about the numbers and the contract.
Do you talk the numbers in that same meeting, or is that another meeting?
I talk the numbers in the second meeting, but I don't present a contract. The contract is sent via DocuSign, another great tool.
Yeah.
And then they sign the contract online.
So you have a verbal agreement at that second meeting. So you know they want to go ahead, and you'll put together an agreement and send that to them through DocuSign.
I don't always get a verbal agreement at that point. I would say of the people that go to the second meeting, maybe 70% end up signing and moving forward. But the way that I look at these situations is sort of like baseball. You know, if I'm batting 300, I'm in the Hall of Fame. that means I'm striking out 7 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
In reality, of the people that I actually meet, I get about 60% of those jobs.
Right. And the ones you don't get are ones you don't want.
They're probably not a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're doing, it takes quite a bit of time. So you're doing 2 meetings and probably a follow-up with this. Once you send out the DocuSign, there's probably questions on that, right? So that's probably either a video conference or a telephone call or a third meeting to review the agreement.
Right, right.
What do you do at the beginning to qualify the people coming in? So you're not going to do all this time with every client that calls.
No.
There's a process that they have to go through before you even set up that first meeting. So what is that like?
So typically I get anywhere from 2 to 10 inquiries a day of new potential clients. And a lot of these are coming through my Facebook marketing program, mm-hmm. which again is something I can go into or teach people how to do. And once they get to my website, a lot of architects' websites look like they're designed for other architects.
Yep.
They're pretty pictures and not much more. And what I realized, again, through working with one of my business coaches is your website should be more about the people you serve than it is about you. So it speaks to them. It establishes authority in the marketplace, third-party credibility through testimonials, publications, things like that. And most importantly, it has something called the Vision Blueprint, which people who click on the Vision Blueprint, it asks them a series of about 15 questions, everything from, do you own the property? You know, how large of a house do you want to build? What is your budget? How many square feet? Which of these areas is most important to you and least important on a scale of 1 to 10? And it goes through living room, bathroom, kitchen, office, all of these. How soon, you know, what is the time frame? Is it 6 months? Is it 2 years? I mean, to me, that is a huge one right there. The big ones are, do they have the money to do it? Is this just a dream, a distant dream?
Yep.
If they've purchased the land, they're probably pretty serious about it. So once they fill out my Vision Blueprint, all of this gets instantly emailed to me, and I have it in hand before I call them. So I'm immediately able to tell where they want to build, how large of a house, what styles they like, if they need a mortgage broker recommendation. I'm constantly refining my questionnaire, but it's good enough that I can immediately figure out which ones I don't want. The ones that I don't want, rather than just simply telling them no, a lot of times I will actually refer them out to some of my subcontractors to give them a chance to develop their skills.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I do. It's rather than telling them no or can't help you, I'll just let them know that we're not a good fit and sort of guide them to somebody that we think is a good fit and help some other local architects also. So you're pre-qualifying. It's all automated for one, so that's interesting. So your website is doing a lot of the talking. So your website is built to pre-qualify, and then your Vision Blueprint is sort of doing the heavy lifting on qualification. It's not only giving you lots of information, but it's giving the client a lot of information about who this person is, who this architect is, what they're expecting. Am I comfortable giving this information? Because if I'm not a good fit for you, I'm not going to want to give all the information that you're asking me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to be wasting a lot of time. There's probably a lot of people that hit that Vision Blueprint, start looking at it and say, this is not going to work out, and they don't even contact you. And so you're not
right.
So you're not wasting time on either end, talking to people that, you know, are not a good fit.
Another reason why I think the time spent up front and on the website is important. I was talking to a very well-known architect at the AIA a couple months back at the Christmas party. And he was saying, you know, I don't know how you get those jobs. We just don't have enough homes in town to walk people through. And so-and-so does, and you probably do. And I said, I almost never walk people through a home. I mean, it's probably like 1 in 10. And I think the reason is I'm establishing that credibility through in other ways, whether right. it's through my website, through testimonials from clients, giving phone numbers of former clients so people can call. People have to become comfortable with you in some way. And really visiting one of your homes, you know, it's one way to become comfortable with your abilities, but it's not the only way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the meetings that you go through, the face-to-face, like you said before, you're building a tremendous rapport when you're doing that, when you're meeting with people face-to-face.
Here's one tip. Never sit across the table from a prospective client. You always sit either next to them or catty corner.
Yeah.
When you sit across the table from somebody, it's like two lawyers at a deposition.
Yeah, you're an opponent.
You create this adversarial posture.
Yeah, that's a good tip. That's a good tip. And that's interesting because typically the client will expect that you will be face to face. You know, they'll sort of point you to the seat and they're going to sit in the other seat. And so do you sort of, when that happens, do you sort of position yourself to go in another chair?
I guide them to the seat where they're supposed to sit.
So you,
again,
you guide them before they do.
Establishing authority.
Yeah.
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 I say, would you mind sitting here?
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So you're pre-qualifying. They're going through the website. They're going through the vision. They're calling you. Actually, they're calling a service. So talk about the service a little bit. So they're calling a number, and they're rather than getting a voicemail or some automated message, or you. Right? You're not answering the phone.
I use a service called Ruby Receptionists, and they do a fantastic job. It's the best $259 a month that you can possibly spend. And they will patch the call through. They know everything about my business. They screen out solicitors and tell them to take us off their call list. They can patch it through to my subcontractors as well. Just like a regular office.
Yeah. That might be that takeaway right there might be the best nugget of the whole episode here. Because imagine how much time you could save when somebody else is answering that telephone call and doing all of that legwork for you. And you're only getting the calls that you absolutely have to get. And so you're getting that call, that call's coming through. You're having that initial conversation and that conversation is all about setting up that first meeting. You're going to that first meeting, you're presenting, you're gathering information at that first meeting, and then you're scheduling a second meeting. The second meeting is about you now pushing information back to them. So you're sort of pulling in the first one, pushing in the second one, you're giving them a presentation in the second one. And at that point, you both know whether this is going to be a good fit or not, that either they're going ahead or they're not going ahead at the end of that meeting, right?
Right. And the operative word is information. One thing I've learned is a no is simply a request for more information. This is a very confusing process for most people. And sometimes when they say no, if you press them a little bit on it, you find out that it's actually that they're lacking some piece of information.
Yeah. The Sandler sales system, I've had Rochelle Carrington on the episode on the podcast before, and one of the things she teaches is to get to know as fast as you can. Get to know. So you either want them to say no and not waste your time, not waste their time, that you're obviously not a fit, or get to know because no triggers, they need more information to get to yes. And so the sooner that happens, the sooner you can either close the sale or move on to the next sale, because if it's not the right person,
and
you don't
saying,
want to waste a lot of time.
Saying no to the wrong client is as important as saying yes to the right one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I say very often, and people have heard me here on the podcast here, that sometimes you make the most money on the clients you pass on.
Right.
Because you can go make more money on the best clients you can find. So even when you think that project is the best project you've ever seen, it's the project that's going to take you to the next level, it's going to get me published, but there are tons of red flags from that client, it's a project to pass.
Yep. I have a $15 million house that I designed that I wish I'd passed on.
There you go. There you go. Perfect example. Yep. And I bet you those red flags were right there day one.
They were. And one of them was, well, we've done this a few times before and it's always worked out badly. We've always hated our architect and our builder and we've not remained friends. And we don't want that to happen this time.
And you said, where do I sign? Let's do it.
And I thought, oh, I can make it different. I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Red flags. Pay attention to them. Use your intuition. When your intuition is telling you no, there's a reason why your intuition is telling you no. So you have that meeting, you sign, you go through DocuSign, and then now you actually have a project. What's that process like when you're actually working with a remote team? From a client's point of view, what's happening during the project when you're managing the process?
So when I'm designing, I'm typically sketching, maybe on my iPad Pro, maybe on Trace, snapping a picture of that, texting it to one of my subcontractors. They then work it up in SketchUp. We get on a go-to meeting and review that and move it in real time. I only work with people who are extremely proficient at SketchUp. I find it invaluable. The files can be exported in a DXF and taken into Revit, which is where we do our larger projects construction documents. Smaller projects can actually all be done in SketchUp layout. And SketchUp keeps getting more and more powerful.
Yeah, yep.
So I like to set up regular meetings. I find that if meetings go for more than 2 weeks, if it goes for more than 2 weeks between meetings with a client, there's a good chance that the project is going to go off the rails or the client's going to lose interest. So ideally, I meet with them in person every 2 weeks and I meet with them online every other week. Mm-hmm. On the weeks that I don't meet with them. Now, I have a client on a very large house that I've only met with once. If it's an out-of-town client, I always fly down there. I always meet with them in person. I have to see the site and talk to the builder and that kind of thing. So.
And then everything else is remote.
And then everything else is remote. And I use GoToMeeting. And there's also Zoom, which I know you use. Yeah. There's WebEx, and I'm sure there'll be something new, you know, next week.
Yeah, but those tools are so important because you can talk to anybody real time, anywhere in the world, and look face to face. Like you and I right now, we're recording this using Skype. We're looking at each other. We can see each other's expressions. We can sort of read each other's facial expressions. And so it's really important to be able to do that. One of the things you talked about, and I wanted to point it out, is that you only work with the most proficient staff. And when you're working remotely, now your pool of potential employees becomes the entire world. So if we were in a brick and mortar and you had to have people come to your office every day, your circle is maybe a half hour commute or maybe an hour commute. That's your radius of where you can pull potential employees from. Now with remote teams, you literally have the entire world to pick from.
The world is my Rolodex.
Right.
Yes.
And so now you literally can find the best SketchUp artists and producers that you can find. It's just a matter of who.
One of them is in Vermont, and he ended up actually moving to Austin because we work full time. He works essentially full time for me now. Yeah. And I have someone else in New Hampshire, and she's moving to Seoul, South Korea, and she handles a lot of our Revit. And the cool thing about that is she can be working at night while we're asleep, and we'll wake up in the morning, and it'll be in our inbox.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. And you said before that when you first start a project, you're doing some sketching on your iPad and then you're sending that off to your team. What is your role in the process? So you're doing a lot, obviously a lot of the upfront, you know, client contact work, and you're doing design. And then the team sort of takes over. Do you have dedicated teams per project, or do you sort of are you structured horizontally or vertically? Do you have teams for every project, or do you have tasks for the process? Does that make sense?
I don't have a fixed way of doing it. I think it depends on the project.
Yeah.
And the tasks involved in the project. For example, we have a job coming up right now that is not particularly a job that I wanted originally. It's a very large Tuscan house that they want to basically redo the whole interior, rip out some walls, probably a $2.5 million remodel. But it's not contemporary. It's not something I'm going to put on my website. And so I immediately recognized this is not really in my wheelhouse. They interviewed four architects. I've never actually met this man in person. He met all three other architects. My fee was 30% higher than all of the other architects. And he still went with me because I did multiple meetings with him. I did online, GoToMeeting. I spoke with him one time for about an hour, barely talked about architecture. I knew his realtor and the builder that he had selected, and so I talked to them extensively, and that's where this referral came from, was from the realtor. By the way, referrals are about 10 times more likely to come from a realtor than from a builder. That's just the way things flow. They flow from the realtor to the architect to the builder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you shouldn't develop close relationships with builders. But so I don't know where I was going with that, but it was just kind of, so I recognized, I remember that this wasn't really in my wheelhouse. So I called up an interior designer I know who, this is all she does, this style. And so she's going to work for me exclusively as part of my team. When we walk in, the client doesn't need to know, you know, that she's hasn't worked for, you know, 10 years for me.
Right.
But I think it's really important to know where your genius lies, where your skill set lies, and to delegate all those other areas,
yep,
where it doesn't, to very capable, highly compensated people. All of my subcontractors make significantly more than they would make and have greater freedom than, you know, than they would have in a traditional office or an average architectural office.
And you said you're not managing their process, right? You're not managing their time. They're not doing time sheets for you. So
it's not hours. It's outcomes. That's right. The other things. And I don't like to charge for hours, and I don't like to pay for hours. You know, when you get a bill from your lawyer and you're kind of trepidating when you open the envelope and you don't know whether it's going to be $1,000 or $3,000.
Yeah.
To me, hours are only something that a client can argue about, feel bad about, and watch the clock the entire time that they're with you. When I do charge hourly, my hourly rate is quite high, but I try to keep that to, say, less than 10% of the work that I do. That's only for additional services.
And you're working
outside the scope.
Flat fee? Is that typically how you work?
Typically, I'm working flat fee, I would say, in 70% of the cases, and maybe a percentage in 30% of the case.
Yep.
I don't think there's any one right way. I think each job has a best way to structure the billing and the pricing. But I will say this, clients are generally much more receptive to a single number.
Yep.
And I think when you get into tiered pricing, you may indeed eke out a little more profit on the jobs that you get, but there's a strong likelihood, and there are several psychological studies that I've read that say you will actually get fewer jobs. So even though you make more on the ones you get, I'd rather focus on optimizing my practice, reducing my production costs by reducing my overhead. And therefore, if I charge a fixed fee, obviously some of them I'm going to make a killing on, and some of them I'm going to lose my shirt on. Okay. I mean, in the worst case scenarios.
Right.
But the average job, I've done so many of them, I know what's involved, and I'm pretty good at predicting what it's going to take to get to the finish line. So things like construction administration, I limit to a certain number of hours, because that's one of those nebulous things. What if it turns from a one-year project into a four-year project?
Right. So you're managing expectations. You're handling that in your agreement. So you know what your limits are. You have limits and triggers that sort of help you manage that. But it's all about, for one, you have a target market. You do a very similar type of work, so everybody knows who mm-hmm. you are and what you do. So you're not doing, you know, large commercial projects and additions and alterations and new homes and this and restaurants and that. And you have no system because you're doing five different types of architecture with five different types of clients. You're doing one type of architecture, residential, contemporary, and that's attracting similar types of clients. And so you can set up these systems and these processes to be able to manage those expectations throughout the process. That's really important, and one of the reasons why you've become so successful at what you're doing. Let's talk about tools a little bit. You mentioned the service Ruby
Receptionist. Ruby Receptionist.
Yep.
Yeah.
And GoToMeeting is your video conference. You're using SketchUp and Revit for production. What are you using for like project management and communication with your team?
So we sometimes use Slack and Asana, but I get a little annoyed with some of the reminders and some of these project management softwares. I've tried Basecamp. Honestly, I like to keep it very simple. It's an iCloud doc, and every Monday morning I get this document that says where we are on which project, what the next step is. And I have another similar document that has the names of prospects on it, hot, warm, and cold, what my next plan is, what my next step is. And I have a third spreadsheet that is basically about cash flow. And with those three spreadsheets, I can pretty much manage my firm. The other good thing is I don't talk to everybody in my firm. I really just talk to maybe one or two or three people, and then they communicate with other subcontractors and direct the work and manage the work of other subcontractors.
Right. So in an office,
if I was managing the work of everybody, it would be prohibitive, time consuming.
Yeah, and even in an office, that's difficult to do. But when you go remotely, that's almost impossible to do. And so if this was a traditional firm, you'd have, these would be project managers who would be then managing the staff who does the work, the producers. And so you're working with two or three, you know, main people who are sort of managing the projects, and then they have teams below them who are managing or doing the work. And you're doing the design, the fun stuff, the stuff you like to do. You're doing the client face-to-face stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing the business development stuff to make sure that the next project comes in. How are you billing and invoicing? Are you using any specific tools for that? Because I'm assuming that's all online as well, right? Are you sending a paper invoice, or are you doing some online work?
Well, When I pay my subcontractors, I use a program called Zelle Quick Pay. Chase has it, Wells Fargo has it, and you can transfer up to $5,000 and it's instant and there's no charge for it. Some of my clients pay me using Zelle. Another thing that I do is I expect payment at the meeting. If I'm having a face-to-face meeting with them, 2 or 3 days before the meeting, I say, here's the invoice. It's, you know, for Thursday's meeting. We'll see you then.
Yeah.
So
managing
not,
expectations again. I just want to point that out.
Exactly. I think so many architects are chasing clients for payment. And I just hate doing that. I know everybody hates doing that. There are going to be a few problem clients that you know, won't pay on time. Work has to come to a grinding halt in those situations. You cannot get ahead of yourself. I remember in the last election cycle, there was an architect who said that he got screwed by Trump and, you know, owed him like $285,000. And I thought to myself, how the hell do you get that far in the red?
And keep going.
And keep going. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And so when you're doing that invoice, when you're sending that invoice earlier, is that just another document that you're sending? Okay, this is how much we're expecting to receive when we meet?
Yeah. I've tried Intuit, and I just like, and I'll be the first to admit that accounting is not my strong suit, but, and I have a bookkeeper who does all of that, but, and she's remote, and I've met her twice in 10 years. And she prepares everything for my CPA, and then my CPA just rubber stamps it and sends it out. But I don't use a lot of high tech for billing. I keep it pretty simple.
Yeah.
My invoices are very simple. The whole project might be broken into 8 payments. There might be some more payments during construction administration that are spread out over the course of the construction. But even if I have 14 projects going on, I might only be invoicing half a dozen times a month because I try to, you know, break it into manageable payments and keep it simple.
Yeah, keeping it very simple. I mean, and you said you're using iCloud documents, you can use Google documents, but basically yeah. it's just really simple, easy to use, easy to understand, easy to share. Software, you don't have to get into the big heavy duty, especially with small firms working with small teams. You know, there's not a lot of complexity to it. So we can keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah. So not with a remote team, not using a lot of, you know, fancy tools. You're using GoToMeeting so you can see one another. You're using, you know, iCloud so you can, you know, share things back and forth.
Dropbox. I use Dropbox.
And then SketchUp and Revit, which, you know, can all be done online as well. And mm-hmm. So any other tools that you're using that's sort of helping you do what you do?
I got my first iPad Pro this year with the pencil.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of fun. So I enjoy that. But I still don't think it takes the place of pen and paper, Trace.
Yeah. Have you seen Morfolio, the app for sketching?
No, I'll have to try that.
We just did a inside the Entree Architect membership. We do a thing called Workflow Friday once a month. A member will share a specific workflow that they're using successfully with the rest of the membership. And this month we did Morfolio. And it's amazing, you know, with using an iPad Pro with the pencil. And this software, this app that will sort of replicate the idea of using trace and layers and sketches and moving things. You know, you can underlay photographs and sketch over them, and very easily, you know, produced into PDFs and JPEGs and make it shareable. Really interesting. software.
There's another tool that one of my architects told me about yesterday that we're going to try that will allow us to be in different locations, each with an iPad Pro and drawing on the same drawing.
There you go.
At the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
And yep. Airplaying that to a client or, you know, go-to meeting. So they're seeing it. He's in Hawaii, I'm in Austin, or vice versa, and we're all collaborating.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. The different technologies are amazing. In my process, the one thing that I really miss the most is the serendipity of sort of walking past somebody's drafting board and seeing something they're doing, mm-hmm. Striking up a conversation, and that design getting better because of that serendipity. That goes away when you're working remotely. Is there anything that you do that sort of replaces that? I mean, obviously you're meeting with your project managers on a regular basis, but do you intentionally have any systems in place that sort of help you with that process? Or does that just go away?
It doesn't go away. In our remote working sessions on SketchUp, it's amazing. We often discover serendipitous things just because of the SketchUp process. Like the other day, I said, go ahead and erase that wall. Well, there was a box around the window that remained. And we said, wow, that looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we just make that black metal and let it stick out and keep that box? So there's a different type of serendipity. And I find that my bonding, my connection with my subcontractors is a deliberate process. It usually happens whether you're in an office or not in an office. It usually happens outside of the office. So, for example, my wife's family has a ranch, and I invited one of my subcontractors down for the weekend. Just things like that, scheduling brunches. I invite the whole family. I don't, you know, my subcontractors can bring their kids and their husband, and I take everybody out to brunch at the Four Seasons a couple times a year. Things like that. The serendipity in the design, you know, we still get together at coffee shops periodically when we're starting a project and sketch together. I think it's important to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the tools, like you're saying, these tools where you're going to be able to work together on the same document, you can do that with Revit, and you can do that. You know, you'll have a tool that you can do that with SketchUp and other tools. I think as these technologies evolve and they become more mature, that those kind of things are going to happen where we're going to work together more often. I also think video, I think GoToMeeting and those types of tools are going to evolve, that they become more real time, that they become, you know, like you can have a monitor with your team on all the time. So you can turn and ask the question, you know, at the moment. You don't have to schedule a time to have a conversation. You just turn over it and look at the monitor and say, hey, Sally, you know, what's the question that you had the other day? Let's talk about that. You know, I think those things will happen as these remote structures evolve and grow and become more of the way we practice architecture.
Absolutely. God, when you're talking, I was thinking about something else that we use. Maybe it'll come to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's wrap things up. Let's I want to ask you this one question that I ask everybody. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I would say I want to say what I think was one of the most important things in my own early evolution. I started going to places where I knew I would meet people of influence and who had the wherewithal to potentially build the types of homes that I wanted to design. And I figured out that there was a health club in town where all of these guys worked out at 6 a.m. And it was more than I could afford at the time, but I got a membership to it, and I would show up every morning and shoot the breeze with them in the locker room. So wherever that place is, it's really about, there's really only two things that can change your life. And that is, I go into this in my program a little bit, meeting a new person or acquiring a new piece of information. And sometimes the person provides the information, sometimes it might be through a book. But it's really about being receptive to meeting people. One of my best clients of all time, I met early on at Starbucks, and I just struck up a conversation. I noticed a man in a dirty t-shirt and a gimme cap get out of a $300,000 car and walk into Starbucks.
In Austin.
And I, in
some,
Austin.
Some green flags started flying.
Yeah. And he said, I need me an architect. And, you know, next thing I knew, I had, you know, 3 years worth of work from him. So I met my wife in an elevator. If I hadn't have said anything, and I actually didn't, I didn't get her name or number the first time I met her. I had to continually ride that elevator for a week until I met her again.
That's very
but
funny.
It's really about being open to and seizing those opportunities and not wasting your time watching Netflix, you know, really, really valuing your time and devoting it to productive activities. And that's not to say, you know, you need your recharge time and your yeah. downtime and your fun time. But if you structure your business in such a way that you're not doing all these other tedious tasks that go into managing an office, you are consequently going to have much more time, free time, to do with essentially whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah. I wrap up every episode, and I'll say it later when I wrap things up. If you build a better business, you can be a better architect. You have more
awesome.
time, more resources, more money to do the things you love to do. And maybe that's, you know, more design. Maybe that's spending more time with your family. Maybe that's, you know, hanging out in mm-hmm. Starbucks, hoping the next Ferrari shows up.
You know? Right. Remote working for me is not about saving money. It's about creating freedom and opportunity.
Yeah. It's a lifestyle.
And the fact that you save money is great, but it's the icing, not the cake.
Yeah, totally agree. That's a great way to wrap up. I totally agree with you on that. And that is that it's about building a lifestyle of flexibility and freedom and doing the things that you really want to do. And you can build any firm that you want. You can build a firm that's designing skyscrapers. You could design, you know, a firm that you know does, you know, prefab sheds. Whatever it is, you can do it in this model. It's really an amazing time that we're living in. WynnWhitman.com is the architecture firm. If you want to go see the blueprint, vision blueprint, it's there. WynnWhitman.com. I highly recommend. It's a great website. I love the way it's designed. Selfbuiltarchitect.com is the training platform that Wynn has put together. It talks all about building these successful firms using a remote team. Wynn, do you have something that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, a couple of things. If people are interested in exploring the idea of one-on-one coaching, either short-term, long-term, it could be really quick, it could be a month or 3 months, I have some packages at selfbuiltarchitect.com/P/coach me. And then I'm going to put together something that I normally charge for, but I'm going to put together something free for just especially for Entree Architect listeners. And we'll have that at selfbuiltarchitect.com/Entree.
Right.
E-N-T-R-E.
E-N-T-R-E. selfbuiltarchitect.com/E-N-T-R-E. Yeah. And that's a video?
Yeah.
That you're giving away there?
Have a video.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. So selfbuiltarchitect.com/Entree. self-built architect /P/coach me. But that's also all at self-built architect, right? Not the entree, but the first one, you can go there and probably click a link for coaching as well, right?
I don't know.
We're going to have the link anyway. We will have it on our page. We'll have them in the show notes. This is episode 208. And so entrearchitect.com/208 we're going to have the links for everything we talked about, all the tools, including awesome. These things at the end here. So you can just go to entrearchitect.com/episode208 and get all of it, including the link to get the free video. Wynn, thank you. This has been a lot of fun. This is a subject that I love to talk about. I think that this is the future of architecture, especially small firm architecture. I think this is the way we're all going to be practicing in the future. And I think it'll probably be some combination of like you said, there's some brick and mortar and some remote, but this is the future of small firms. So thank you very much for spending some time here and sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Hey, if you like this episode, I encourage you to share it with a friend. That's how we're growing this podcast. One architect at a time, one listener at a time, one share at a time. This is episode 208. So the link is entrearchitect.com/episode208. Go to town right now. Share it with a friend. Put it on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Email it to everybody you know. entrearchitect.com/episode208. Hey, and don't forget to download the free course we have for you. It's free, and it's going to teach you how to put together a profitable architecture firm. Profit for small firm architects, entrearchitect.com/free course. And enrollment for Entree Architect Mastermind groups will be opening soon, so watch social media or come back to this podcast right here. Listen for the announcement. Watch it. This is the most powerful membership program we offer. You want to be part of this. Sharing knowledge, setting goals, finding accountability for your progress. You'll find it at Entree Architect Mastermind. Stay tuned for more information. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business. I challenge you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.